In 2018, something strange happened on daytime television. Tyler Ninja Blevins, a 27-year-old professional gamer with electric blue hair, sat across from Ellen DeGeneres explaining how he'd just played Fortnite with Drake in front of 600,000 live viewers and made millions doing it. Ellen looked genuinely confused. "So people watch you play video games?" she asked, her tone suggesting she'd just discovered a new species. Traditional media executives shared her bewilderment, but Ninja's appearance marked something profound. Gaming had evolved from basement hobby to cultural juggernaut, generating more revenue than Hollywood and music combined. Yet, despite this meteoric rise, the business machinery powering this transformation remains remarkably misunderstood, even by many inside the industry itself. Gaming suffers from a peculiar blind spot. Wall Street analysts dismiss it as kid stuff. Meanwhile, industry insiders often romanticize creative purity, resisting business analysis as if profit and artistry can't coexist. This mutual misunderstanding has left even billion-dollar investors surprisingly ignorant about how gaming actually works. Consider the carefully crafted myth of the lone genius developer, a narrative deliberately manufactured by Trip Hawkins at Electronic Arts in the 1980s through his "Can a Computer Make You Cry?" campaign. By positioning game designers as auteurs like film directors, EA created compelling marketing. But this story obscures a messier reality. Even celebrated indie creators rely heavily on publishing deals, marketing expertise, and financial backing. Super Mario didn't emerge purely from Shigeru Miyamoto's imagination. It resulted from navigating technological constraints, market timing, and Nintendo's strategic business decisions. Companies like Valve, Supercell, and Nintendo succeeded through sophisticated platform control, data-driven design, and innovative distribution as much as creative brilliance. The industry's self-imposed divide between creative and business people has become counterproductive. Financial limitations aren't creativity's enemy, they're design challenges like screen size or processing power. Gaming's journey from cultural fringe to mainstream accelerated dramatically in the 2010s. Pokemon Go's 2016 summer filled parks with people of all ages hunting invisible creatures, grandmothers and teenagers wandering streets with identical focus. This visible spectacle confirmed what data showed. Gaming had shattered its 1834 male stereotype. Candy Crush boasts over 250 million monthly players. Roblox's 150 million users create their own games. Fortnite hosts virtual concerts for millions simultaneously. Two shifts enabled this: widespread broadband, now 6 billion mobile subscriptions globally, eliminated physical distribution barriers, while smartphones turned pockets into gaming devices. This expansion made gaming critical to major companies. Apple generated $11 billion from mobile games in 2018, exceeding iTunes and music services. Sony's PlayStation earned $21 billion, representing 23% of annual revenue. Tencent pulled in $19 billion through ownership and investments. Tech giants made aggressive moves. Google launched Stadia, Facebook acquired Oculus, Amazon bought Twitch for nearly $1 billion. For decades before, gaming operated like the toy business. Publishers manufactured physical products, retailers sold them, sales concentrated around holidays. Nintendo mastered this model after reviving the industry from its devastating 1983 crash, when retailers dumped gaming products in landfills. While others declared video games a fad, Nintendo implemented quality control and strategic marketing under the mantra, "The name of the game is the game." Crucially, Nintendo imposed strict licensing on third-party developers. Minimum orders, exclusivity agreements, royalty payments, 5-title annual limits, rebuilding consumer confidence through controlled inventory and curated quality. Around 2009, games as a service transformed the industry. Instead of buying physical products, consumers downloaded content and paid through microtransactions. Executives initially missed this shift, focusing on traditional metrics, like units sold. Grand Theft Auto V exemplifies the transition. Despite generating $1 billion in 3 days and selling nearly 130 million copies, its real triumph was digital monetization. Take 2 strategic timing, releasing at the 7th console generation's end, then on PS4 and Xbox One, enabled methodical content releases that generated nearly $2 billion in add-on revenue over 5 years, dwarfing the $746 million from full game downloads. By 2014, digital-only companies overtook conventional publishers, growing from $1 billion combined value in 2005 to $67 billion by 2018 versus $47 billion for legacy publishers. Mobile gaming's growth masked brutal competition. Threes, a 14-month development that won Apple's Design Award, faced immediate free-to-play clones that dominated rankings. Yet success remained possible. Monument Valley's 8-person team spent $852,000 over 55 weeks to generate over $14 million in 2 years through polished, innovative design. Game design demands diverse technical skills working in harmony. Research examining 139,727 industry professionals across 30 years reveals that cognitively heterogeneous teams with points of intersection produce the most critically acclaimed games. This demolishes the lone genius myth. Creativity emerges from cohesive groups with varied abilities. A studio's greatest asset isn't its widely available technical components, but its talent pool and organizational structure. Leading studios create distinctive workspaces. Blizzard's game character statues, Rockstar's vintage arcade cabinets, strategically attracting the diverse, skilled creatives crucial to success. Yet not all roles receive equal valuation. Designers, despite their visible creative impact, are typically paid less than producers, creating skewed talent distribution that gaming must address as it matures. In 2005, Take-Two initiated the sports video game battle by pricing its ESPN games at $19.99 versus EA's $49.99. When Take-Two's higher-rated games captured Xbox market leadership, EA responded by securing exclusive NFL and ESPN licenses, boxing out competitors. EA's Madden NFL franchise has since sold over 100 million copies and generated more than $4 billion, exemplifying why owning recognizable IP represents the difference between sustainable growth and market irrelevance. GameStop dominated physical retail through its buy-sell trade program. New game sales netted just $12 per $60 title, 20%, but used games transformed profitability. Customers traded games for $25 credit, GameStop resold them at $55, keeping 100% revenue. Popular titles resold approximately 5 times, generating $162 per game lifecycle versus $12 from new sales, a self-sustaining cycle that made GameStop nearly invincible in the physical era. The free-to-play revolution removed the $60 barrier, reaching previously inaccessible consumers. Most users paid nothing, while a small subset spent far more than traditional prices. Lowered barriers intensified competition, pushing publishers into Brazil, Russia, India, and China. Industry gravity shifted eastward, with Asian firms excelling at profitable free-to-play models. Nexon's MapleStory succeeded in America by offering prepaid cards through bike-accessible 7-Eleven stores. Understanding that business constraints shape creative decisions as much as technical limitations. Established publishers initially hesitated on mobile gaming. Super Mario Run didn't launch until 2016, nearly a decade post-iPhone. Gaming has exploded beyond predictions. Amazon acquired Twitch and launched game studios, Apple created its arcade subscription service, and PC gaming resurged through Steam and esports. Innovation emerged across multiple dimensions, pricing models from GameStop's secondhand sales to Nexon's free-to-play, marketing strategies like Nintendo's quality focus and EA's celebrity designers, organizational structures from Naughty Dog's flat hierarchy to Supercell's lean teams, and distribution shifts like Take-Two's recurrent revenue and Sony's streaming content. Publishers now invest billions in established franchises that drive engagement across platforms. Gaming has become mainstream entertainment through superior content and business innovation. As boundaries between gaming and other entertainment blur, the industry's economic and cultural impact continues growing. What began with a blue-haired gamer on daytime television has transformed how we create, connect, and consume entertainment in the digital age.